Whether you own a business, starting a business, or work in a business, there are certain qualities that all successful businesses have in common. In today's episode, I'm going to share with you 8 tips to business excellence that will boost the motivation of your team and have clients raving about you. I'm Sam McCool, and welcome to A Higher Branch. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of A Higher Branch. As we get to the end of the year, there are a lot of businesses competing for their share of customers and clients. So what makes one business more successful than the other? Now, I've been in business for over 28 years. I've started, run, managed, and sold businesses. I've failed in businesses. And I believe that I've acquired a lot of experience, a lot of learnings over the last 30 plus years. And I'm going to share with you my 8 tips to business excellence. And at the end, I'm going to give you a 9th bonus tip. Now, I've left it as a separate 9th bonus tip because it's not really a tip. It's more something that changes the culture of the business. Anyway, if you are new to this podcast, hello and welcome. Welcome. Hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any future episodes. So follow us on Apple and Spotify. Don't forget to hit the notifications icon. We're also on YouTube. Hitting that notifications icon makes it easy for you because when you do log on to your particular app, my episode will magically appear in the Listen Now section. And that's certainly how I line up my podcasts. Anyway, let's talk about business excellence. What are the qualities and what are the tips that make all successful businesses the best of the best? Okay, my first tip, and I promise you, I'm not sharing anything with you that I haven't personally lived by and built within my own business. The first tip is don't make your business about money. You and your team will not be inspired. Focus on a purpose and a mission. A lot of business owners and executives make the mistake of thinking that staff are motivated mainly by money. All the research proves otherwise. My approach is to pay your team what they are worth, but don't use sticks and carrots to motivate them. Especially millennials. Millennials want to be motivated by the mission more than anything. So you need to put purpose before profit. You know, many years ago, Wharton Business School published a book called Firms of Endearment, which talked about businesses that are focused on purpose. And these were businesses like Harley-Davidson, BMW, you know, Whole Foods America. And these companies all had one thing in common, and that the people who worked in those businesses were all focused on this one mission. So, for example, you know, at BMW, they hired people who were all car enthusiasts and who believed in the mantra, BMW's mantra of sheer driving pleasure. And likewise with Harley-Davidson, there was a mission for those people. And Whole Foods, they hired a lot of foodies who were really obsessed with, you know, healthy eating and healthy living. And so their people bought into that mission. And here's the thing. When Wharton Business School studied these firms of endearment, I think there was about 20 of them, they found out that the same companies that were focused on a purpose made the most profit. They outperformed the S&P 500 by a ratio of 9-1 over a 10-year period. Can you believe that? 9-1. So here are companies not talking about profit, focusing on a mission and on a purpose, made the most profit. And I think that's what you need to do in your business. And here's the thing, that's how I operate. Every business that I've ever been involved with, I'm completely passionate and obsessed about how we're impacting the customer experience, how we're designing software for the team, how we're designing solutions for our clients. I look at pain points in the market and I say, how can we resolve those pain points? What can we do to eliminate those pain points? I don't show up and say, how much money did we make today? I don't show up and say, show me the financial accounts. For me, that's historical. You need to go back and look at those after you're performing. It's sort of like it's the prime. Your primary concern should be what value you're adding. What at what level are you punching? Are you punching at average and settling for mediocrity? And I did an episode on that, by the way, which we'll put in the link as a link in the description. Or by focusing on money, that's exactly what you're doing. You're focusing on mediocrity, because you will find that when you focus on money, you start looking at your expenses column too closely because you're obsessed with the margin, with the profit. And when you start looking at your expenses, then you start skimping on the things that you should be spending as an investment in your business. You know, it reminds me, Apple made a $1.2 billion loss the year before it made its biggest profit. So the year after, it made a $3 billion profit, but the year before, it's a $1.2 billion loss. Sometimes you need to stay focused on your North Star and trusting that eventually you will get there. Now, I don't mean here, you know, spend money needlessly, right? It has to be smart investment. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about your lens when you walk into the office, whether you work for someone or whether you own the business, should not be money. It should be love. Love for the customer and love for where your business can get to. Okay, my second tip is you need to look after your staff, but at the same time, do not accept mediocrity. You know, over the last couple of years, as we've experienced very low unemployment, I feel like the average has dropped. The average performance of most businesses has dropped. And it's because businesses have accepted mediocrity because they had no choice, right? And we are one business that refused to accept mediocrity. And in your business, you should always accept and demand excellence. Average lifts or drops, depending on how high you make the bar. So by accepting mediocrity, you're dropping the bar. And I can tell you now, if you are settling for this average, then chances are you're actually falling behind, even if you stay at that average, right? If your performance is at this average and other companies are lifting theirs, you're going to fall behind. Okay, so that's my second tip. Do not accept mediocrity. Not from yourself, not from your team, and not from your suppliers. Now, my third tip for you, and this especially for the senior executives and for the actual business owners and founders, is to hire people that can work on parts of the business you're not good at. You need to stick to what you're good at. If you ask me the question of what is the single most important thing that you've done in your businesses to help you grow, and that is I've hired people that are good at the stuff that I don't like doing. For example, I don't like numbers. I don't like accounts. I mentioned earlier that I don't like focusing on money, right? But I've hired a great CFO. Other thing is I don't like managing projects. I have great ideas. I develop the specifications for the projects and product development, but I suck at project management. So I've now brought in an excellent CEO who's now my business partner, who is extremely good at that. So my message to you is you need to know what you're good at. More importantly, you need to know what you're not good at. Now, you could be a small business owner with just three people and think, well, Sam, I don't have the coin to go and hire someone and pay a big salary because they're going to do, what I'm not good at. And that is a tough question. And I've done a lot of business coaching in the past. And my point is, that's an essential asset. You don't view that as an optional spend. You got to view it as paying your rent. Okay, and you've got to budget for it. And if you haven't budgeted for it, then you really shouldn't be kicking off your business. You know, when you do a plan for your business, part of it needs to include who you need to hire. And if you don't have enough capital to hire the right people, then guaranteed your business is going to fail. You know, most businesses fail because of a lack of capital. Why? Because a lack of capital leads to inefficient allocation of resources, or the inefficient use of resources, or the lack of resources. Okay, that's my third tip. My fourth tip is that You need to accept that you are not perfect. You need to keep learning to master your craft. You know, one of the biggest mistakes you can make in your business is to think that you know it all. And what you know now is going to be relevant to what you need to know in the future. So you need to attend training seminars and conferences as much as you can. Ideally, get a business coach or a business mentor. Make sure it is someone with a little gray hair, because in business, I can tell you, experience is everything. Now, I have two advisors in my business, outside of my business, I should say, two coaches and mentors. And one is a gentleman in his mid-70s that I lean on when I have a tough decision. The other person is actually my daughter. My daughter, who's young enough, right? Because old people have perspective and new people have this innovation mindset. And my daughter may not know the intricacies of my business, but when I tell her the different scenarios that I'm faced with and I ask her which path should I take, she almost nails it 100% of the time. So that's my fourth tip to you, and that is you need to get a business coach and mentor and keep learning as much as you can. My fifth tip is to start a rainy day fund in case things go wrong. The economy, poor health, whatever it is. When you start a rainy day fund, now I call it a rainy day fund, it's basically a reserve fund. And, you know, more recently we had a 6-month reserve fund. In other words, if everything went wrong in the economy and we went through a tough period, we had 6 months of funds that can get us through. Break even, if we made break even or even made a loss. More recently, we've bumped that up to 9 months, because as times change, you need to change as well. And one of those things you need to change is how much you need to put in that rainy day fund. Now, as interest rates at the time of recording this episode, interest rates are on the rise. And I know a lot of people, a lot of businesses in retail are struggling. Sales are down up to 30, 40, 50%. For some businesses, especially in luxury goods. Now, what happens if you're a business that's managing like a family would, week to week, living off week to week money? The moment things go wrong, your business is going to go bankrupt, and that's not in a good, healthy position to be in. So when times are really good, and we've had it really good for the last few years, the best thing you could have done with your money, your profits, is to put aside in that reserve fund and build it up. If you've squandered all your money, you're in a vulnerable state. I hate to call it, but it is in fact true. By having a reserve fund, it takes the pressure off and you start working, continue to work for love. I said from the outset that your lens shouldn't be about making money. It should be about making an impact and making a difference with your clients and your customers. And you can't do that if you're focused on money. So when you have the reserve fund, then becomes a sport. You start to play with confidence and not fear. I mean, what happens in cricket, for example? Anyone that's played cricket out there will know that when you start batting on the back foot, what happens? Inevitably, LBW, or you get bowled out. You stop scoring runs. Well, it's no difference in business. If you don't have a rainy day fund, you start operating from this fear mindset, and then you stop scoring runs. And clients, it'll reflect in your advertising. Clients will sense that desperation, and even your staff. And it's just not a strong position to be in. Okay, let's move on to the sixth tip. My sixth tip is to not diversify into areas of no competence. I meet many people who make money, and instead of reinvesting it in their own business, they go into other areas. I knew a guy a few years ago who was a very successful mortgage broker. And he made a lot of money. He was focused on his business, grew rapidly, opened a couple of stores, shop fronts, and hired many more mortgage brokers. But after a while, instead of investing it back into more shop fronts and more people, guess what he did? He went and opened up a cafe. Now, it's an area of no competence, because he thought it was cool. He said, yeah, I'd love to own a cafe. I drink lots of coffee. I hang out in cafes. And let's open a cafe. Let me tell you, he lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, opening the cafe, spending money on the fit out. And for many months, it did not make money. More importantly, during this time, he took his eyes off the business that was making him money. So my message here with this sixth tip is stick to what you know. And I don't mean diversify into areas, extreme areas like I just mentioned, something nothing to do with your business. Sometimes it's even your own business, an adjacent part of your business, right? That you can say, well, that would be cool to do that. If it's not an area of competence and you're already making money, you don't need the complication. Okay, my seventh tip is to work harder, not just smarter. Yes, you heard me correct. I do not believe in or adhere to this four-hour work week. I appreciate Tim Ferriss and his adventurous spirit, but this constant focus on making a quick buck is what's wrong with the Western world economies. We do not lack intelligence. We lack a strong work ethic. Building a business is brick by brick, day by day. There's no easier way. And that's speaking from personal experience. You know, a lot of people will see where we are in our business today and they say, wow, look at you guys. You're so successful. And they try and copy what we're doing now and forget that we have 30 years of challenges, setbacks, pain, stresses. We went through the global financial crisis, right? But we stuck to it and we recognize that it's not just about working smarter. It's about working harder. And you know what? Working hard is not what causes stress at work. You know, my father worked sometimes 12 hours a day and he came home with a smile on his face, had a great meal and slept like a champion, right? So why is it now people are working even shorter hours and getting even more stressed? Because they're focusing on this imaginary world where you can make money by working less because you're working smarter. Well, the whole world is working smarter. So the difference between successful people and people that are failing is clearly not that. It's that people that are successful work really hard. They work long hours. And long hours, as I said, isn't a stress. It only becomes a stress when you focus on the money and not the passion. When you focus on the money instead of making an impact and a difference in your customers' lives. So I hope that makes sense. And I feel very strongly about this because I really believe in a strong work ethic and not just working smarter. Okay, let's move on to the eighth tip for business excellence. And that is, you need to stay focused on the micro. Ignore what is happening at the macro level. We cannot control that. What do I mean by the macro level? So the macro level is what's happening in the economy. At the moment, everyone's talking about high interest rates and what's happening with unemployment, what's happening with inflation. So they become obsessed with hearing the news media. And what that does is that scares them, right? Because the macroeconomic picture looks at the broad economy, right? But we can't control what's happening in the broad economy. We can't control, you know, what's happening with supply chain challenges or with inflation or with unemployment or with interest rates. That's what the government's for. That's their job, right? Your job is to focus on what you can control. So you need to stop listening to the business news. Now, I know this is controversial for some people because they say, Sam, I need to know what's going on so I can maneuver my business. You know what? If your business relies on what is happening in market conditions, then you're like bobbing up and down on the ocean, drifting aimlessly, right? And you don't want that. You've got to stay on your course. During good or bad times, you've got to stay on that course. You know, companies like Apple, I keep using them as an example because historically they were a phenomenal example. Companies like Apple actually experienced the most growth during the global financial crisis. And there are a lot of other companies that stayed focused on what they do, stayed focused on product development, on building a better customer experience. And these companies came out of the global financial crisis stronger than all the others. And in fact, it reminds me during the financial crisis when all our competitors stopped their advertising, stopped their marketing, stopped their product development, we went on the front foot. We actually started advertising more, marketing more, and we kicked off many projects. That's the best time to actually kick off a project. It's not when you're too busy running your current state or your business as usual, you kick off projects during those quiet times where you have the bandwidth and the team and the resources to actually develop these products. So by watching business use, it just makes you fearful and you start work defensively and out of fear. And as I said earlier, business is like sport. If you start playing defensively, you're going to stop scoring and eventually you're going to lose. Now that leads me to my ninth bonus tip to business excellence. And I'm going to kick it off with a story. In September 1995, when I started my banking and finance law firm, we did this one thing that got people talking. Now, we started with one client, but quickly grew to over 35 corporate clients within 18 months. We went from a team of 3 people to 74 people. Now, our firm's meteoric rise attracted the attention of the Law Society, which asked me to talk at one of their functions. And the topic was how to go from being a great lawyer to being a great entrepreneur. Because you could be a great hairdresser or a great lawyer, but not know how to run a business, right? And sometimes, in fact, the best, you know, people at their craft really suck at being business people. So I stood up on that stage and talked very passionately about the needs to corporatize, commoditize, the need for systems and operational efficiency, the need for transparency and the need to engage and motivate staff. But then I had a comment from the back of the room from someone who said, "But that still does not explain how your firm grew so quickly. How did you get so many clients in the door? You've only been in the industry a short period of time and your competitors have been in the industry for 20, 30 years. And that confronting question then sparked my honest and impromptu response at the time. And it went something like this. "Well, there is one thing that we do that gets people talking about us and spreading the word. And it's really very simple. We go beyond the call of duty." Now, I can tell you, to a room full of lawyers, I thought my response was going to, you know, fall on deaf ears. You know, lawyers are, after all, obsessed with time costing and billable hours and efficiency. They're not really good at marketing themselves and they rely kind of on word of mouth. But I went on to explain that sometimes we need to perform our job not solely for the purpose of making money. And I know I mentioned this earlier, but this is subtly different. And not for operational efficiency. Sometimes we need to do more for less. Sometimes we need to make less money and even a loss on some jobs. You know, I gave them the example of how our firm does not shy away from the difficult customers or the difficult files. So early on, I told, you know, my banking clients, "Give me all your difficult files that the other lawyers don't want." And, you know, on stage, I told them the story of how one day I received an urgent set of commercial loan instructions at 5 p.m. A senior paralegal and I then stayed back to prepare some very complicated contracts. After we finished the documents, I left the office at 8 p.m. and drove for an hour to deliver the documents personally to the customer's home where he and his lawyer were waiting. It's because the client had to fly overseas the next morning. I received a polite thank you and they closed the front door. I was not asked if I wanted a glass of water to come in and rest a little. I was a little disappointed because at the time I felt like I needed a big thank you. But anyway, I built a bridge and got over it and went about my business, right? 2 weeks later, I received a letter from the CEO of the bank that I was acting for. And the letter thanked me for going out of my way, I quote, "out of your way to help the customer that also happened to be a personal friend of his. It was a CEO of another major company." Now, let me tell you, over the next 6 months, our volume with that client quadrupled simply because we went beyond the call of duty. And that was my message in 1997. Today, now there are many businesses that live by this mantra. You know, there's so many companies in the US that is famous for going beyond the call of duty. You know, Zappos is one company that sells shoes online and they back it up with a call center filled with people that are eager to please the customer. And they're famous for it, right? They call it delivering happiness. And there are many stories that are circulating on the internet about how Zappos staff go beyond the call of duty. There is the story of how one employee spent over 5 hours on the phone with a bride-to-be looking for a pair of shoes she remembered seeing in some bridal magazine. Now, they spent that time on Google trying to find that particular pair of shoes, and they did. Now, do you think Zappos made a profit out of that transaction? Definitely not. But it was great marketing dollars because that customer happened to work for the Washington Post and she talked about it. I'm talking about it, right? So we have to accept that we live in an age where customers have more power. People are sharing their stories online. Now, this scares the hell out of a lot of companies, the ones that are focused on operational efficiency and money, you know. But the clever businesses see that as an opportunity. The opportunity is to get people talking about you by going beyond the call of duty. So, on that note, I hope you've enjoyed today's episode and it's inspired you. Whatever you do, you give it your best and you go above and beyond. So when a client expects this from you, you say, yeah, this is good, but you know what? I've thought of something else that I think we can do that's even better. Now, I can tell you, when you do that for clients, their eyes, you know, open up and they say, wow, you care about me. You care about my mission. You care about my vision. And I promise you, you'll have that client for life. Okay, well, again, thank you very much for listening to today's episode, A Higher Branch. As always, if you enjoyed this episode and know someone that could benefit from listening to it, please share it with them and also become an ambassador of A Higher Branch and help me spread the message, because I'm really on a mission, a personal mission, to help as many lives as possible. Thank you again for listening, and I'm going to leave you with this tip. And it also applies in your business. And that is that every morning is the dawn of a new day and your opportunity to hit the reset button and try something new. On that note, I hope you have a great day. And as always, live consciously, my friends.